Welcome to the Revision Path Podcast, brought to you by Revision Path, a showcase of the world's black graphic designers, and web developers. I'm Maurice Cherry, and this week I have a great interview with Pittsburgh-based letterer and designer Raquel Rodriguez. We talked about typography, freelancing, graffiti, and a whole lot more. If you like this interview, make sure to check out the other interviews on revisionpath.com. Hope you enjoy. Okay, I'm sitting here with Raquel Rodriguez. Raquel, why don't you tell the Revision Path audience about yourself and what you do?
Okay. Well, thanks first, Maurice, for having me here. What I do, I consider myself, I guess my business card says, I'm a letterer and designer. So I do a little bit on the design side and development side. Primarily as a designer, I work with creating lettering. I'm working on figuring out how to create typefaces and making them available. That's in the process right now.
Yeah.
I do make websites, mostly building off of WordPress for different nonprofits, educational institutions. Usually people who don't have a gigantic budget, so right. That working off of WordPress is pretty feasible for their, you know, for what they can afford and what I can do.
Okay.
So yeah, I think pretty much that sort of sums up what I do.
So the letter, when I think of a letterist or someone who does lettering, for some reason I think of the people that do comic books.
Interesting.
But you do more like logos and type treatment.
Right. Right. So if you think of, if you think of the different, you know, something that's unique, so it's not an existing typeface.
Right.
And I will create whatever words need to be made from those.
So you create fonts too?
Well, that's what I'm, so I've created fonts, but I need to figure out how to actually make them available and so that people can download them.
Oh, okay.
So that's the part where I mean that I'm figuring out how to do that. But yeah, I've created fonts. You know, they exist. I use them because I have them at my disposal. But
I am a huge, huge font nerd. Really font snob. But I really, really like fonts and typography. I think it's really interesting. That's one thing I want to get into is creating my own fonts and things like that. I know there's some software out there that sort of helps you along, but I'm trying to really find a good resource, like a good book or something that will help me with, you know, letter forms. I think I saw something recently was a video of Hustler and Fair Jones, the typography guy, and they were talking about how they build letter forms, and they start with two letters, an H and an O, because the H is like the quintessential square, the O is like the quintessential circle.
Right.
And then from the O and the H, you can make a D because it's half square, half circle, and then they sort of build out from there. I'm like, that's really organic. That makes a lot of sense how that works.
Right. And when you're starting, you generally will start right with the majuscules, the uppercase letters, and then exactly build out from there. Once you start looking at letter forms a lot, you realize which ones are very similar. Like I'll do P, R, D, because they're essentially same types of strokes that you're making, right?
Like straight, round.
Right. And there's one way for me, there's building the letter forms, and then there's the more sort of tech-related, logistical, how do I then make this an actual font that I can release to people?
Right.
And that's the part that I'm figuring out. And I know Fontographer is sort of the software that can help with that, but I'm still learning, trying to get from point A to B and get a fully released and all of that. And then also realizing that for it really to be a full-on typeface, it's not just the letters A through Z. You know, you have to have the numerals, you have to have punctuation, right? So there's lots of other things that you have to do beyond, 26 letters. And then, you know, is it going to be a display font? Is it only uppercase? Is it uppercase and lowercase?
Right.
Are you going to have italics? You know, do you really want it? If it's going to be a full out everything, well, it's going to take a lot more.
And I know it's a lot that goes into it. I saw. I think it was a recent sale on a type website. I think it was Type for Type, and they were selling Heroku Pro. It has like 20 weights. I mean, a lot of weight. And they were selling it for maybe like $9.
Wow.
I'm like, yes. I was like, there's so much time I'm sure that goes into just building all that out and then exporting it. So, I mean, it was a fail, so I guess it's probably just part of it.
Yeah, and it's just, as far as building the letter forms, I used to be, when I was a, in my younger days, I was involved, I was a graffiti writer, and that's how I got started into letter forms. That's where I started, and I was just amazed by what you could do with different letters. And so now, I mean, I still have a lot of my old sketchbooks, and I look at a lot of my old sketchbooks and stuff, but then also just looking at, I guess, the more formal literature around typography. Are really, there's, you know, amazing old type specimen books that you can find on the web for free and look through them. There's amazing ones in the libraries that you can get for free, not to have forever, but you can go to the library and look at them, you know? So there's a lot of incredible resources. And just with things like Flickr and a lot of online communities that have a similar interest in type, you can just find amazing, amazing things.
So, speaking of libraries, I know you're also a librarian.
Tell us,
how did you get into that? How did you get into library sciences, and how does your work with design sort of play into that?
Sure. So, I became a librarian, I mean, officially as a professional. I received my master's in library science in 2000.
Okay.
And I went to the University of Pittsburgh for that. And then I worked as an academic librarian for about 7 years, also still at the University of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And so with that, for me, what that entailed, primarily it was working with the public and helping them find information. So I'm working at the university, dealing primarily with students and faculty who are doing research, for the most part, right? If you think of your days as an undergraduate, you had to write papers.
Right.
You would go to the library, hopefully, to figure out how to do that. Not how to write the paper, but to get the resources to write the paper.
Exactly.
And then working with faculty for whatever research that they're doing. So it was learning, and I was, so at that time, 2000, you know, the web, the internet, as we know it, as we commonly call it, had existed for a few years. Not, you know, wasn't around for decades, obviously.
Right.
And so online resources in libraries were sort of a burgeoning, I guess, were developing resources at that time.
I remember being in, and it's funny because I'll tell this to my cousin. I have a cousin now who goes to Carnegie Mellon. And it's so interesting talking to him about how he does his work with, like when he used to research papers and how it was when I was in college, when I was in high school, you know, we still had the card catalog, and we had a computer, and, you know, it was sort of, they were just starting to do the computerized card catalog.
Exactly.
And in college, that's really when I feel like, because I was in college maybe 99, 2000, and the shift started happening where it was a lot more, you're looking at stuff online, you're citing web pages and things like that. Along with, you know, books as well, but it was a good balance. It was interesting.
It was really starting to shift.
Right.
And now there's a humongous shift. Now you can search, you know, thousands of journals at one time, which is amazing. It's an amazing access to information, but then people are also dealing with incredible information overload. So I worked as an academic librarian for several years. And during that time, I kind of was exposed in a very visceral way to people having a tough time using online resources, right? People looking for books, people looking for journal articles, and they can't find it because the tool that they're using is really poorly designed in a number of ways, both the interface and then just how the, I guess, the what's underneath it, right? What's underneath how people are searching for things.
Right.
And eventually I ended up leaving libraries, having more to do with where specifically I was working at and being unsatisfied with that, but also wanting to explore more, a more creative career. So So I had been involved with art my whole life growing up, just drawing things, and as a like as a teenager, being involved with graffiti. And then I dropped all of that when I went to college, mostly because I didn't know how you can make a career from doing something creative. I didn't know what graphic design was. I didn't know any designers. I knew a fine artist, but that to me didn't really appeal to me. I didn't think, oh, I want to go to a museum. That also didn't seem very feasible. You know, my parents weren't going to pay for me to go to school to sit and say, well, I'm going to be, my dream is to go be in, like, the Met, you know, and then have them say, well, how does that work? And that's
well,
how
a real, get a job.
Exactly. So, in a way, I mean, but I loved being a librarian in lots of different ways. But then I also just got kind of tired of the specific environment where I was. And once I decided to pursue design, I found that a lot of what I had learned as a librarian was really pretty applicable to what I was doing as a designer. Both in, for example, now if I meet with a client and just talking to them and figuring out what is it that you're trying to achieve, what is it that you need, is very similar to when I was helping patrons and them telling me, I have some kind of an information need, but you don't always know very clearly what it is. So helping to clarify that type of need for someone, helping to explain certain things about what is happening. If, let's say, somebody needs a website, and they tell me, oh, I don't know anything about technology, but I think I need this for whatever reason, and trying to help them comprehend what it is without it being totally overwhelming and, you know, have them get totally lost on everything. So for a lot of different reasons, my training as a librarian has been really helpful. And then also, especially making websites, understanding how to organize information.
Okay.
Doing the information architecture part is 100% what a librarian works with every day.
Right.
So it's been great. It's been applicable to what I want to do now, but it's still also allowing me to do something more creative than, and something that I can look at and say, look, I did this thing, I made this thing. That's great. For me, it's a really great feeling.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you also freelance. You do what you do. I think you mentioned before that you're a freelance artist or graphic artist, whatever.
Yeah, freelance designer. Yep.
How long have you been doing that, and how has it sort of been going so far?
I guess officially, I don't even know how I would say officially when it started. I know I had done some work for free over the past, I don't know, 5 years at least, for friends. You know, I know lots of people who are in different nonprofits, different social justice organizations, who aren't even nonprofits, it's just people trying to do something. But they need a logo, they need an announcement, and I would sometimes volunteer to do that type of work. But I would say it's just freelance and trying to figure out how to do this and get monetary exchange for it has been about a little over a year. So about, I don't know, 14, 15 months. And it's been a challenge in just constantly always having to be different for work.
Right.
That, you know, the constant, I got one job and I'm working on it right now, and it's great and I'm happy to be working on it, but then I also know that, well, this project will be done in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever the case may be, and knowing that I have to be looking for something else. That, to me, is the biggest challenge of it, you know, figuring out the business aspect.
So you're located in...
I'm in Pittsburgh. Yeah, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
How is the design scene? Is there really, like, a design community?
So far, when I had lived in Pittsburgh for several years already when I worked as a librarian. Then I moved back to Chicago, which is where I'm from, for about 4 years. And then I came back to Pittsburgh about, it'll be 3 years at the end of May. And I got to know the community a little bit when I initially moved back.
Mm-hmm.
I joined AIGA, the Pittsburgh chapter of AIGA, and I started to meet some of the designers that way. And they, actually, they're quite nice. Like, everyone was very nice mm-hmm. and welcoming. And right now, I'm a volunteer, and I help with different events and things. But that hasn't necessarily translated to projects.
Right.
You know? So, everyone's been very nice in a lot of ways. And when I do have questions, I've asked more experienced designers who have been freelancers for longer periods of time, sort of just for advice about how to handle different projects or how to go about finding more projects.
Mm-hmm.
And people have been very responsive.
That's one thing really I also do design. We're always eager to help each other out because we're all really in the same boat.
Right.
It's very rare that you'll find someone who's really sort of secretive about how they get business, how they keep business, how they attract business. Mm-hmm. Because I think when all of us succeed, the whole industry gets better.
Right.
So there's a lot of, I found this worldwide really. Other entrepreneurs are really keen on helping each other out to make sure that we're all growing and progressing together. So I find that to be a really good thing. Talk to me about Chicago Public Service. What's that?
Chicago Public Skills.
Skills! Sorry.
That's okay. No worries. So Chicago Public Skills is just sort of a alternative moniker I use for my work sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it comes from, well, me having been born and raised in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
but also very much the name is sort of related to, again, my, going back to my graffiti days, you sort of, when you are a graffiti writer, you generally have a crew that you're a part of.
Right.
And for the most part, I mean, there's no 100% hard and fast rules, but oftentimes your crew will have three-letter acronyms. So they were all kind. I mean, I don't know the ones. There's some that are worldwide, well known all over the world. And in Chicago, some of the very popular ones when I was growing up were Aerosol Crew, Spray Brigade, ICE. And those letters always stand for something.
Okay.
So like Aerosol Crew, ASC, but they also stood for like All City Champions or.
Mm-hmm.
You just make it whatever you want. Usually it's just about how kind of cool and badass your crew is, right?
Right.
And so as I got older, and then when I started to do design and had my own website and all these things, I was like, okay, I want it to be not just my name,
mm-hmm.
But I liked the idea of calling sort of myself, giving myself a larger name.
Right.
So Chicago Public Skills. In the sense that, you know, what I do is skillful. What I do is for, you know, public interaction, public consumption in a way. And whether it means I'm doing lettering on some business outside or whether it's the website, you know, it's still a public display. And, well, Chicago, I'm from Chicago. So that's why. So my website is RaquelCTS.com. So, yeah, that's where that comes from.
Who would you say are some of your design influences? I had a chance to take a look at your portfolio. Really great, great work.
Oh, thanks.
Who are some of your influences?
Well, generally, I mean, oh, well, let's say, let me say more specifics in general.
Okay.
I mean, lettering-wise, mm-hmm. I am 100% absolutely influenced by just growing up and having been involved with graffiti. So, and even with that, I can't say that there's one particular writer that really, I wanted to do stuff like that person. Because also when you're in graffiti, it's funny, you want to develop your own style. The purpose is not, I want to look like X, Y, and Z. I want to look like me.
Yeah.
And that's it. And nobody will look at it and never confuse what I did with someone else.
Right.
And as I got older and as I got more involved with the formal design community,
mm-hmm.
It's funny, I would hear people say, and I actually think this is really good advice, that when you see something that you like, you know, try to copy it. Not to try to sell it, steal it, and say, oh, this is my design. No, no, no. Copy it for your own practice. Copy it, you know, let's say I see a book cover that I just, oh, wow, I really like the type. I really like the layout. And so, okay, maybe I will just sit there and sketch it out just to get a sense of the spatial, you know, look fitting where. Where is the weight, you know, where's the heavy parts, where's the light parts? And just so that I can have that practice. And I have, that's actually something that I have found really useful for using tools like Illustrator.
Okay.
Because Illustrator to me is sort of, I mean, Illustrator and Photoshop, the whole creative suite. They're sort of, they're sitting there on your screen.
Yeah.
You know, it's not,
on campus,
I don't,
waiting for you to do something, but it's hard to sort of figure out how to interact because it's like a different tool.
It's totally different.
Yeah.
And to me, there's no context. Even though that you can have the little rulers on there, it's just sort of, it could be 100 feet tall and just sitting there on your screen, right? And that's impossible.
Right.
So for me, I had started to do this sort of project just for myself, where I was looking at, I'm a big fan of Bauhaus design.
Okay.
The layout, the colors, the sort of stark. I'm also a big fan of the 20th century modern design. I'm also a big fan of arts and crafts, like Frank Lloyd Wright, Rennie McIntosh, and not just in the visual design, you know, 2D, but like Frank Lloyd Wright's homes are amazing to me. But also, like the Rennie McIntosh lettering, I'm a big fan of. And so, looking at some of those things and trying to sort of just recreate it on at the same scale in Illustrator so that I could get a better sense of when I'm working on something in Illustrator to see proportions and to see angles and things like that. But again, not because, I want to bite everything that Rennie McIntosh did and say, look at this, because I made this. No, it's just for me so that I can see things better on a screen, because I find it to be a very sort of awkward place to work on.
Well, I know what you mean. I do a lot of designs in Photoshop as well, and it's in Illustrator too, and it can be anything from a bookmark to a pamphlet to a billboard that I'm designing, and it's to get that sense of space can often be very awkward. Just in terms of, especially with typography, for, you know, kerning and tracking and making sure everything looks right and the spatial relation to other elements, it can be hard to see until you, I guess, see the finished product, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, that doesn't look too bad.
Right.
So there might be some effects you try to accomplish or reproduce, and then you see the printed version, and you're like, oh, that's not... Well, it's always going to be.
Right.
You know, so I totally
yeah, so the copying thing is something that I've started to do more.
Mm-hmm.
Just to... And also just, like, very recently I started getting much more heavily into lettering. So I've been looking at a lot of sort of older calligraphy books and handwriting primers, you know, how you're supposed to handwrite. Because also as we use computers more, I know my handwriting has gotten worse, significantly worse than when I was like in 8th grade. So partially to help me write a way that I like again, but then also just like looking at the form, you know, the strokes of what does what. So if I see some really nice old books about handwriting, I will look at them, I'll read them, and then I'll try to do those little exercises that they say, again, so I can just feel like, so I can feel in my hand, oh, this is what that stroke feels like. Like, to make this R, this is what it feels like. I think that, for me, it's very helpful. It's really important.
It's so interesting you mention that, because I see a lot of interfaces now that are starting to include signatures, like signing with your finger, and it's a different experience trying to write something with your finger and try to write with an instrument.
Yeah,
totally. There's a local delivery place here, for example, that uses iPhones, and so you get the iPhone and then you tap your, you know, amount, tap the tip, and then you sign it with your finger.
But
it's like, like it looks like scribble, like, you know, a scribble or something.
Because we don't write with our fingers.
Right. So it's interesting that, you know, as one skill develops, another skill might start to atrophy.
Sure.
It's a really kind of interesting correlation. I do design work, and I probably do more design than development now.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm starting to learn Ruby, so I can get more back into my development route. Because I really sort of think that design, I don't know, like, I like stuff, but why do I like it? And thinking about why do I like stuff, and why do I like these forms and features, and what's the motif, what's the feeling, you know, that I'm trying to accomplish. I like a lot of mid-century design for that same reason.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it and I can picture a certain atmosphere or a certain song. I use music a lot when I'm designing to get an idea of, okay, if I really want to do some nice, inspired design, you know, I may listen to some Motown. Or I may, you know, even listen to some, I don't know, Buddy Holly is.
Yeah.
Anything that's right around in that same time frame to get an idea of, you know, what the design, to get that sense of whimsy that comes with, you know, sometimes in design that aspect. What advice would you give to someone that's looking to start out with design, say with what you do with lettering and things like that? What sort of advice would you give to someone starting out?
Well, I guess advice for different parts, right? There's advice for your own specific, like, practice,
mm-hmm.
as far as what you do as a letterer. Do you want to, you know, do you want it to be lettering in the sense of, like, calligraphy, like a very sort of traditional calligraphy with the 45-degree, you know, pen nib? And that's it. You want it to be something more sort of new school. Like, if you are going to try to look at things, I mean, you know, advertising has stolen from graffiti, like everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You see everything is advertised on buses, and everything
mm-hmm.
is advertised on sides of buildings where it's illegal if it's graffiti, but it's legal if someone is paying for that demonstration, right? But even also trying to take that style of lettering, that very specific style, and making it sort of presumably acceptable for advertising, right? Is that something, do you want to focus on that, like this much more newer look? Do you want to focus on script lettering, you know, sort of fancy things with all kinds of flourishes? And which is, I'm sort of all those things. I like all of them. So I try to do it all. But also just figuring out, you know, you have to practice. You have to literally do it all the time. And not just when someone's paying you.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, for me, developing just in general as a designer was, you know, I have to do things. Not just when I have a job to do it. And I like it. But also just remembering that you're only really going to get better from doing it more and more.
You have to flex that muscle that... In order to really be able to strengthen it, you have to really...
Sure, you have to use it.
Yeah,
you have to use it. You have to develop it. And then, you and I were talking about this a little bit already, just on a professional level, you know, networking. Really, and it sucks. Some people hate it. You know, some people are very sort of shy. Some days I can be totally shy. Some days I can be a lot more outgoing. But having that, you know, networking, try to look for meetups, try to look for, you know, tweeting people. I kind of hate Twitter, but I use it because that's what people, there's a sort of expectation around it. I don't hate it, but I kind of, you know, I don't really like it. but you never know. If you see someone doing something that you like and you shoot them an email and just say, wow, I really like this. Do you have any advice? How did you start? Is there a book that you read? Last year I was at a conference, Weapons of Mass Creation, in Ohio, and the guys from Friends of Pipe were there. And I just walked up to them. They were really nice. They were at a table. They had this table set up where they're sort of selling stuff, posters and whatnot. And I had this idea. It's like, oh, you're here. This other guy, Alonzo Felix, who's also a pretty awesome... typographer and letterer. I just asked them to sign my schedule. I was like, can you draw me a letter? I said, I'm really into letters, and I think it'd be cool if you did this. because it'll help me remember this, and I'm blog about it. And they're like, yeah, whatever. So they drew me letters. I asked them, is there something that you read that you find really useful? And they mentioned a couple of books, some of the Phaedon, I can't think of the name. They're these two really big, gorgeous set of books about typography. Amazing books. And I bought one of them, so I can afford both of them. They were totally, you know, they said, yeah, I look at this and I really like it. You know, like you said, I think most people are more than happy to tell you what they find inspirational or useful. It's not only just to help you, but it's going to help you figure out also whether that's really even what you're trying to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's maybe the more you look at it, the more you realize, well, maybe this isn't so much.
Or you may get a different type of inspiration.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, someone that they might not have gotten when they said, oh, this is, you know, my input, it's what I like.
Right. You'll get something totally different from it.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, just even though we have all this technology and ways to try to connect with people, I think if you really tell someone, I really like what you do, like, I'm really impressed by it,
mm-hmm.
without necessarily being, you know, sucking up too much.
Right.
But just say that, and hey,
There's an interesting sort of popular, well, excuse me, popular school of thought behind it. You know, you give away what you know for free. Just, you know, share your knowledge because that helps the entire community grow.
Sure.
You know, there's not really any sense in keeping what you know just to yourself, unless it's some trade secret or something perhaps about your business. But,
right.
You know, we're all out here designing and learning, and the medium is growing and changing every day. So it helps if we're all learning and sort of teaching each other, even if it's in small ways.
Right. And even like you said, we were talking about this again earlier, where it seems like more and more what you know, a designer doesn't just design things anymore.
Yeah.
Even if you are not, you know, the responsibility isn't on you to ever have to code anything,
mm-hmm.
I think you are better served as a designer to at least have some concept of what's going on with code. Even if you don't ever have to touch it.
Right.
Like if you
but
know.
You should know whether or not your design is feasible enough.
Exactly.
To be code.
Right.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Right. So, I think while on the one hand, you know, it can feel overwhelming, I know I've felt it, where I feel like, well, I want to learn about more about programming and development,
mm-hmm.
but not sure, well, where do I start? Do I learn, am I supposed to learn Ruby? Am I supposed to learn,
right.
you know, Python? I don't even know why I would choose one thing over, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like which one is better to sort of start out with?
Right, all these sort of questions, it can be totally overwhelming.
I would say PHP.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, because a lot of those sort of strongly typed languages, you'll find that once you learn one, the others start to become easier because
right.
they build on the same level. They're all built on structured programming. So there are certain concepts in one that sort of apply to all of them.
Right.
The language might be a little different.
Sure.
The concept is still the same. So if you think about it sort of algorithmically, it becomes a little easier to grasp it if you've got one language kind of under your belt.
Sure. Yeah, I definitely have heard that too.
If there's one space in the world that you could design for, what would that space be and what would you do?
What do you mean one space? Like, you mean
like it could be
however I want to find
it. However, any, it could be a city, it could be your house, it could be anything.
Oh, wow.
But you want to just put your thumbprint on, like, this is mine. I did that.
You know what? Sometimes I really wish the public transportation in Pittsburgh could be redesigned. And if I could do that, because I don't drive. I don't have a car.
Mm-hmm.
I myself do not have a car. And I feel like public transportation in certain cities, and I think Pittsburgh is one of them, there's sort of this, like, you know, it's not cool to ride the bus because that means you're either broke or you don't have a car, right? Okay, is Atlanta like this also?
Absolutely.
And Pittsburgh primarily is just buses. They don't have trains. They have one train that's kind of weird, and I don't even know who uses it. But there is a real sort of, I think, just lack of understanding of why people use the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if even just the rudimentary research were done by the court authority around why people use it, around the problems that they, the current writers, that what they have,
mm-hmm.
and that can help you, you know, do an amazing redesign of the service itself. Let's not even talk about aesthetics. Let's just talk about how people use it, how people access it, where it gets people to and from. You know, and I think that can make a humongous, huge impact in a city's vibrancy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it gets really easily overlooked because there's a sort of assumption that the people, the primary users of a bus service, are not sort of who a city cares about anyway.
Right.
And even more so right now in Pittsburgh, because it's had this growing reputation over the past couple of years. It's been called, you know, the most livable city in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the city that has the highest rate of poverty among working age African Americans across the country. So how can it be the most livable city yet have this very, very specific counterpoint to it, right? And I think the service like that, a bus, you know, public transportation service, says a lot about a lot of things, about how a city views its constituencies and how it can be improved. So that would be one thing that is totally, you know, apart from my own, like, my house that I would redesign or stuff like that, you know. I think it would be a really great functional project also.
Ooh. Where can the Revision Path audience find you online?
Oh, so my website is Raquel CPS, and that's RAQUELCPS.com. And then I'm also on Twitter, begrudgingly on Twitter, and that's at The Planet Rock. So TheplanetRaq. You know the song.
Gotcha. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me and talking to
the
Revision Path.
My pleasure. I was really excited when I found your website, so I'll definitely be checking it out more and more as you get more interviews. And I'm really excited you decided to interview me.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
Thanks for the response.
Thank you for listening. If you're a black graphic designer, web developer, letterer, interactive designer, whatever, contact us. We'd love to interview you for the website. Thanks again so much for listening. Check us out at revisionpath.com, and we're also on Twitter and Facebook as well. Thanks a lot. Peace.